This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station. The Health News Digest on the Bigger Picture. BFM 89.9.
Good afternoon. You're listening to The Bigger Picture. I'm Tina Camellia, and joining me this week for our Health News Digest segment is Juliet Jacobs.
Good afternoon.
Hello. So this hour, we are focusing on physical activities and the things we try to do to improve our fitness in the age of technology. Here's what we have lined up.
Yes. So first up, do fitness gadgets really work, or are they actually just a distraction, like, you know, every other bit of technology that we have, or almost every other bit? So what if there's an exercise pill that could give the same effect as exercise? Then after that, we will also enter the virtual world to see how much social media affects the accountability and authenticity of our fitness goals. Is it healthy psychologically? We find out.
But before that, we kick off the discussion by asking, how do you prefer to work out? And do you eat before or after working out? Stay tuned, BFM 89.9. Welcome back. It's Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Tina Camellia, and I'm joined by Julie Jacobs.
Good afternoon. Hello, Tina.
Today, we are asking you, what do you prefer to do to stay active? And here's what some of you have to say.
I run a lot, and I do ballet as well.
So. Yes, I do. I swim.
Running, swimming. These two is the most common exercise that I do.
I do some stretching.
Badminton.
I exercise every morning. I walk and I go to the gym.
Actually, I just play football at my park near my house.
I hardly exercise, actually. But when I do, I love to play football, jogging. And
yes, I do exercise, but I'll probably do a lot of sports. So it's along the lines of futsal, running, and also going to the gym and lifting weights.
I usually play basketball and run and boxing, that's all.
I used to go to the gym, used to.
So what do you do to exercise, Juliet?
Well, like the last person just said, I used to. I have been failing miserably these last couple of years, which, you know, coincides with the birth of my child. But I used to be a real gym bunny. I used to go to the gym like 3-4 times a week. And I also used to love hiking. I used to go hiking in Bukit Gasing, actually, every week or twice a week, sometimes 3 times a week, pre-child.
But your child now should be old enough to be participating in some of those activities, you think?
She is, I suppose, but she's also very unruly. And there's things which I want to talk about later as well, just the safety issue of going into the jungle alone with the little one. But right now, it's just kind of running around in the park and chasing after her, which is not quite the same intensity as, you know, my previous workouts. But anyway, we'll see how that goes.
I want to come back to the parks, but that's for a little bit later. Personally, I enjoy barbell sports. That's what I do. Last year, I think I bought a set so that I can do it at home and I don't have to go to a gym, because I think gyms can be, you're paying for everything, but if you're not using everything, I kind of feel a little bit shortchanged in that respect.
Yeah,
so,
I understand that.
Yeah, so I'd rather invest in my own set. I also go for yoga every week. I used to go maybe 2 or 3 times a week, but now it's just once a week, just good enough just to have that restorative element to lifting heavy.
And just to add something to your, you know, having your own little, your own equipment at home, there's no heavy breathing and weird sounds coming from your co-gym. Sorry, this is just speaking for personal experience.
But you seem to enjoy doing outdoorsy stuff.
Oh yes, I used to. Again, used to love going outside and just feeling the sun on my skin, just running around. Because, I mean, you know, we have desk jobs basically, right? We're stuck in the office for 8 to 9, sometimes 10 hours. So just that 1 hour of just running around in the jungle, it really used to not just improve my health, uplift my spirits as well. It was just such a wonderful experience. And parks are crowded. I mean, Bukit Gasing would always be packed at like whatever time that I went. It was insane. Yeah. So it's not just me, obviously.
I think hiking is becoming a more popular activity right now, especially with how a lot of these trails are becoming more well-maintained and therefore more accessible, more family-oriented as well. That's a good thing, I think.
It's a great thing, but also the crowd tends to get to you, but never mind, that's just being selfish. I remember being stuck behind what I call the slow people and losing my temper.
Right. Like,
control yourself, they're here to exercise as well.
I mean, you used to go to the gym and you used to go out hiking, going to the parks and all of that. Which one do you prefer more?
Oh, actually, I love them all. There was no preference. I needed that balance.
Right.
I couldn't do one or the other. So I love the gym. I love how good I felt after that and how I could, you know, release tension. And I like the way it helped me maintain my weight and just, you know, gave me a lot of energy. But hiking, like I said, it improved my stamina, but it also gave me that outdoor feel, that outdoor touch, which was severely lacking thanks to this job.
But I think gyms are a little bit overrated, especially because during the fitness boom, maybe about a decade ago, maybe, mm-hmm. when you have a lot more franchise gyms,
yes, that's
so right. the big chains, and then you start having more boutique teams and you're having more standalone kind of
yes.
neighborhoody
yeah.
gyms, and they come with a price. They're a lot more expensive, I think. And sometimes it's the only one in your neighborhood, so you don't really have a choice.
I think that depends, actually. I mean, just looking at the neighborhood gym in my area, in Taman Melawati, it was actually a lot cheaper than the bigger franchise gyms because you could pay by how many hours you spent there. So they kind of catered, because they're obviously very tiny gyms, right? So they kind of did whatever they could to get a lot of people to come. And it was doing very well.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
But like I was mentioning earlier, I stopped going to the gym just because I'm only occupying one small section of this three-section gym. I mean, I don't use any of the cardio machines. I don't mm-hmm. use any of the weight machines. I only use the free weights and only the barbells, not even the dumbbells. So, and I'm okay. paying as much as everyone else.
So I'm that person who would use everything, including the sauna, including the steam room. I would fully utilize my gym membership. And I mean, the gym that I used to go to, they had a wonderful thing where every 8 weeks they would give you a program to follow.
Right.
So, you know, they call it the reprogramming. And, you know, you would, so once you sort of hit that plateau, they would reassess you, weigh you, measure you, and then they would give you a new workout to do, and it would use everything in that gym. So it was, for me, it was, you know, really value for money.
Yeah, that's yeah. sweet. But we did ask people what they think about gyms and the prices and whether they find it overrated, just like I do.
I don't know. I've never been to one. Yeah, I mean, at least not the one that you pay for.
Well, I think it depends on which gym you go to, I guess. Yeah, different gym, different rates and all those. Yeah.
Yes. No, I don't really follow, so no comment on that.
Overrated, I think.
Of course, that's why I don't go.
For the price over here, I think it's quite expensive.
I don't join any fitness club because where I live, we have an in-house gym.
Yes, I do, because you can do your workout at home, like you can do buy dumbbells or like, I don't know, push-ups, any like regularly exercise, yeah.
To a certain extent, they are, especially the big chains around in Klang Valley. But there are some of those gyms out there that have those affordable prices as well.
Overrated. They can choose not to go to gym and exercise because outside is much easier and it's like you can breathe fresh air rather than aircon. Yeah.
The majority of them find it outside of the price range. Mm-hmm. I certainly felt that way. Do you think a good option is to go back to nature and use whatever that we have available, maybe in the parks, in public spaces?
I think it's a nice option if it's close to you. It's a nice option if you have the time to go at the right hours. Yeah. You know, because sometimes you're in the office from, you know, like losers like us from 7 to 5 and, you know, beating the jam to get to the park sometimes is a bit difficult. But if you have that time and you can make those nice hours where it's not too hot, where it's not too empty, then there's that. Because it's not just the weather, I think. It's also the safety thing. Because I remember when I used to go hiking in Bukit Gasing alone, everyone was always afraid. They would be like, how can you go alone? You need to go with somebody. And that just wasn't an option at that time. So there's all these other factors that you need to take into when you're going to a public space.
And now you spend a lot of time in the playgrounds with your kid.
I do.
How's that for a workout?
The workout mainly is me chasing her. So it's not quite the workouts I used to get pre-child. You know, obviously I can see I'm not my fit self that I was before. So it doesn't quite have the same impact. No, I mean, it's fun. But, you know, also you can't really do, yeah, the kind of workouts that you want to do. Because, again, you're chasing this child around. So you can't really, like, focus on doing your routine as such. But that's just me. I've seen many mothers do it. I've seen, when I was in Hartamas yesterday, I saw a dad, you know, running with his child in the stroller. Both him and the kid were climbing on the monkey bars and they were doing all sorts of things. So, you know, fitness goals there.
Do you think that there's enough policies in place to kind of encourage let's say, business policies, you know, to encourage staff members to go out and about and be active. For example, we do have pretty decent tax relief for our sports equipment every year. We get to, I think, was it 300 ringgit. Yeah, which is, it was not going to cover a lot. That's probably like 2 months worth of gym membership.
Less.
There you go. But at least for us, we do have some monthly allowance if you go to a gym.
Yeah.
Which I utilize for my yoga classes.
Exactly. And I think, like, in our office, for example, you can also use it for other classes like Zumba, if that's your thing, or yoga, Pilates even, or whatever is under the fitness branch of things.
So fitness isn't just about exercise, it's also diet. So even though you don't get to exercise as much as you used to, do you still watch what you're eating?
Why are you putting me in such a terrible spot, Tina? sadly, no, because I just tend to eat to compensate for my stress. But maybe that's a bit too personal to share on air. I don't know.
Last week, you were eating overnight oats. That's pretty healthy.
That was. But then again, as you noticed, only lasted one day because then I didn't have the time the next few days to prepare.
I actually prepared overnight oats for my breakfast this morning.
Very good.
I was inspired by you, Julia.
Oh, okay, then I must be inspired by you being inspired by me. Okay.
But according to researchers in the University of Bath last month, they published a study that found that exercising while fasted is better for your health than doing so after having eaten. When you were doing a lot of, do you go in the morning when you exercise?
Yes, yeah. I used to go at like 7.
Do you have your breakfast first?
Yes, I would be up at like 5 something. I'd have my breakfast, you know, then an hour later I would be at the gym working out.
When I used to go to the gym, I go fasted as well. And I found that I have much better focus.
Okay.
Just the mental sharpness to concentrate and to work out. It was much better in a fasted state.
Okay. Actually, it was the opposite for me because when I go to the gym after work in the evenings, for example, before I started my morning regimes, I used to go in the evenings. And sometimes I wouldn't have dinner, I'd just go straight. And a couple of times I actually passed out. Once I passed out and once I nearly passed out. And then my gym instructor was like, can you please make sure you eat before you come because you obviously can't do it.
Right.
While fasting or while fasted. So after that, I always had a meal. I would wait an hour, then I would go and work out.
So according to this study, a control group of healthy but overweight men exercised after eating a 600-calorie breakfast. They actually burnt more calories but not more fat compared to another group who worked out on an empty stomach who burned more fat.
Okay, that's,
and I think that that's one of the goals when you go on a fitness regime is the excess fat that you kind of want to get rid of, right?
Yes.
So blood work taken also suggested that the benefits that came with working out while in a fasted state particularly improved blood sugar regulation and insulin levels. So, and the lead researcher, Dylan Thompson, said that if we just think of this in evolutionary terms, our ancestors would have had to expend a great deal of energy through physical activity to hunt and gather food. So it would be perfectly normal for the exercise to come first and the food to follow.
That makes a lot of sense, actually, yeah, when you think of it that way.
Yeah.
But I suppose now if you're so used to having your breakfast and going and doing things, like in my case, for example, I can't imagine doing something without my morning coffee. It's an addiction. I guess we're just very different people.
So with that, what I can gather is that at the end of the day, it's all up to us to work around our limitations and also what suits us best, whether it's our schedule, whether it's our preference for when we eat or how we eat. The most important thing, I think, is to not have any excuses. Find a way to keep moving, even if it's chasing your kid around the park. I think that qualifies for some physical activity.
Some. Not enough. But yeah, no excuses. You're right.
Up next, we explore technology's role in forming healthy behaviors and tracking our fitness goals. BFM 89.9. Hello again. It's Health and Living on The Bigger Picture. I'm Tina Camellia.
And I'm Juliet Jacobs. Good afternoon.
And we are doing our health news digest segment. Earlier we were sharing the ways we try to stay active and the challenges we sometimes face. Technology, or specifically fitness-based technology, tries to address these challenges. So we have things like gaming consoles. I don't know if you've used any of these platforms.
I've never actually. I know there was a Wii Fit. I remember
yes,
that one.
That's another one.
I think showing my age was a very long time ago.
Yeah.
Right?
So you get to play like virtual tennis with your favorite tennis players or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Or you can dance on the spot.
Dance or go bowling or all sorts of. I mean, they even do like a training system for you, right? On the spot running, for example, and things like that. Yeah.
I've never tried any of it, so I can't really comment. But it's obvious that technology is trying to incorporate fitness into whatever products that they put out there, right?
Yep.
And of course, we also have things like fitness trackers. You can monitor your footsteps, your heart rate. I use my phone, my S Health app.
Samsung Health, right?
Yeah, yeah. Samsung Health. And I mean, I pay attention to the numbers that are moving with my footsteps, like the footstep tracker thingy. I pay attention to it. And sometimes I feel like, oh my God, just 50 more steps to 10,000. And I go downstairs and I'd be walking in the park.
Very good.
Yeah.
I don't use anything, I obviously, at this point in time. But I guess for me, when all these health trackers came out, I just thought it was very gimmicky. I said, mm-hmm. just go run, lah. Why do you need to know whether you did 10,000 steps or not? You can tell by, you know, the way you feel, by the way your clothes fit. But obviously, it has an effect on you.
Right. And Noel Chilia and Jeff Sandu, our tech maestro, they were on Health and Living maybe a few years ago talking about this, a very similar topic. And you were mentioning that you find it a little bit gimmicky. But this is what they have to say about it.
You can't avoid the way the trend is going right now. And a lot of people, the clients that I work with, everyone has the phone with them all the time. And it's great that companies are coming up with apps and all kinds of ways. So just beyond your music on your playlist, there are apps to help you run and do all kinds of things better. I think it's here to stay. I use some of these apps myself. I use them together with some devices that I have as well. And I have clients, people who are new into fitness, people who have been doing fitness for a long time, and they're all into it. And I think it's only going to get better, and you're just going to see more devices come up in a few years to come.
Yeah, we can leave the home without our wallet, but not the phone. So, you know, obviously they're tapping into that.
That's right.
You carry everything in your phone. Yeah. So why not?
Why not your fitness? Yeah,
why not
exactly.
Your fitness? Yeah.
I think that is kind of true. I mean, I don't have a wallet, in fact.
Yes, I can attest to that.
But I always have my phone with me. And I think with that footstep tracker thing, mm-hmm. I carry my phone everywhere I go more than I would if I don't have that tracker, just because it's logging these steps for me, right?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I also record. I mean, you can manually input your sleeping hours, your caffeine intake. I don't keep track of my diet. I don't log those in because I think it's
calories
a little bit more...
things, yeah.
tedious to log those, but water intake. So yeah, I really fully utilize this app.
That's great. I guess at the end of the day, whatever works best for you, right? If you enjoy it and, you know, it makes you take that extra 50 steps, why not, right?
Yeah. And the good thing about how integrated it is, you don't notice that you're doing it. You don't notice it because you're not clipping on accessories. You don't need to have like a heart rate monitor and then like a blood glucose whatever measurement thingy that you have to clip onto your body everywhere, right? It's just on your phone. Everything is there. If you need to log something, you open the app and then after that you just close the app. So it's so seamless, I feel. It's just so natural to just turn to your phone and be like, there's an app for that.
Exactly. There's an app for everything now, isn't
there? So I think that gamifying fitness can help you with tracking your fitness goals, especially if that is a problem. If you have issues with getting motivated, I think that gaming element to it is kind of motivating.
And I think also, I think there are a lot of like fitness communities out there where people, like, I know I joined something because it's a private group, but it's a group of mothers who got together on Facebook and they, you know, motivate each other on this closed group. And then they post like sweat fees, they call it, and, you know, post-workout selfies and things like that, just to motivate, you know, other mothers and say that, you know, look, I've only had half an hour of free time, but I did it. You can do it too, those sorts of things. And I think that's a good way to, that's also using, I suppose, technology to keep fit.
Yeah. And Jeff also has some input on that.
Well, before, you know, smartphones were pretty simple and then they started to become a bit more complicated. There's like, you know, gyroscopes and the sensors. So like right now, your phone can even track the, you know, the amount of steps that you take, your heart rate. And a lot of people, like Noel said earlier, you know, a lot of people bring their smartphones to the gym and then, you know, they strap on their phones and listen to music.
Yeah.
So if you're doing that, you might as well just download an app and it will be able to track your steps. You don't have to buy another device and you don't have to buy like a watch or, you know, like a heart rate monitor. Watch.
Yeah.
So that itself sort of kickstart the whole trend.
I had that heart rate monitor watch. You have a band that you have to strap around your chest and you have to use a watch that also takes the other pulse from your wrist. So it's kind of yeah, it's a lot of equipment that you need to be carrying with you. So if it's just on your phone, it's just so convenient.
What would you do with that information, just out of curiosity, like your heart rate and things like that?
So for me, because I have a pre-existing heart condition, it's congenital, so I need to be watching my heart rate.
Fair enough.
But I think also some people are trying to reach a certain heart rate to know that they are expending the amount of energy that they were expecting to.
Okay.
So I think people are using it for different reasons. But there are a few things that I have at the back of my head when it comes to all these kind of things is, I don't know the accuracy, right? That's one. But if I stick to the same app or the same device, so I'm looking at shifts in trends. If you use different phones, for example, if you change phones every month, then there might be
fluctuations and very different,
because it's not
data
calibrated or whatever, right? But if you're sticking the same device, the same app, so you're looking at things in relation to something else rather than absolute numbers.
Yep.
So I think that's one way I work around it. But also, I mean, I was talking to a friend of mine who's also an endurance athlete.
Okay.
And he was telling me about how he used to rely a lot on these fitness gadgets. But when he was doing I think it was a triathlon or an Ironman, and he was running, and his watch, his pace setter or something like that, stopped working.
Okay.
So he has no idea how many minutes or hours he's in. He does not know his pace. He does not know his heart rate. And that just psychologically, it can throw you off, because you rely on all these numbers to tell you whether you're on track compared to your previous performances, right?
Yeah.
So you have an idea of how you were performing previously, but now you don't have these numbers to guide you, to tell you where you are in relation to all of that.
Right.
And it just throws you off.
Like when your phone battery dies on you, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, same thing. Oh, wow. Okay. So then how did that make him become less reliant after that?
So I think that changed his perspective a little bit. I mean, he would still use these equipment and the apps and whatnot, because he's a professional athlete, but he tries not to let it dictate how he rarely checks.
Okay.
So it's post-event, post-run, post-swim, he checks it. But if it's not working, it's not working. Don't bother about it. Just keep moving.
Okay. I think that, just keep moving. I think that should be the takeaway from all of that.
Right. But if you don't do all of that, if you don't exercise, right, and if there's a fitness or an exercise pill that can do all of that for you, that can create the same metabolic effect in your body, would you take your pill or would you go for an exercise?
If you ask me now, in my current position with child and all and work and all that, I would say yes, I may up straight away.
I like the idea of sweating, purposeful sweating, not like sitting in the office and sweating, but if I'm out for I don't know. But apparently there is a drug that can transform lives of those who are unable to exercise because of physical conditions. But this is according to studies in mice. So I don't know if it works on humans yet.
Correct.
Here is Ronald Evans at the Salk Institute in San Diego, who is the lead researcher of this study.
The potential benefit of a drug that can tune you up in the way in which you normally get tuned up by exercise could have really dramatic effects. Endurance athletes almost only burn fat in their muscle and save the sugar for the brain. And by studying this, we created a chemical, a molecule that we can manufacture relatively easily. The drug reprograms the muscle as if you were training and saves the sugar and makes it selectively available for the brain and trains the muscle not to use the sugar but to use more fat. So this is exciting because it means that benefit should be conferred to people who are sedentary. If you're in a wheelchair, if you're a soldier who was injured, if you're in the hospital getting surgery, you're immobilized in all these cases. There are many reasons why people can't either walk or run or exercise. Weight, arthritis, age. And the idea is if you could bring a small molecule into the picture that can confer the benefits of fitness without training, you could really help a lot of people. And so we're excited by the potential and also by the science.
So the experimental drug allowed mice to run on a treadmill for 270 minutes
Whoa.
Before exhaustion set in.
Wow.
This is compared to other mice not on the drug, they lasted only 160 minutes before they reached their physical limit. And that's more than 100 minutes longer for those who are on the drug.
That sounds like a miracle pill right there.
I know. So it makes the body burn fat faster, but it also burns sugar more slowly. I don't know what kind of long-term effects it would...
Yeah, I was just going to say, I mean, there's so many other things like pre-existing conditions that you need to take into account as well, I would imagine, right?
Yeah. But
okay. More research needs to go into it as well. And like you said, it hasn't humans, I don't think it's even been approved for humans or anything.
I don't think so. But it's quite exciting that we are able to pinpoint the specific chemicals in our body that you can switch on to create this kind of effect, right? Mm-hmm. And put it in a drug form and then have that effect in mice, at least for now, right?
I was just going to say, does this also lead, you know, to the potential of abuse, I suppose, of using it in sports, in you know, competitive sports, for example, or just people who are lazy and don't want to exercise and maybe they start taking too much of it. I don't know. There's so many possibilities here, right?
It's just like using performance-enhancing drugs, like steroids. I mean, steroids used appropriately can actually be helpful for like pain management, inflammation management, but it can also cause a lot of other issues if you are using it for jacking up. Right? Mm-hmm, and you have like heart failures and ED and that kind of stuff. So I think this drug is probably going to create the same kind of effect. I mean, like what the researcher was saying, that it could be helpful for soldiers who lost some physical abilities. But and if you put yourself in the shoes of these soldiers, I mean, the whole career is about physical mobility and activity. And I think they want to maintain, at least psychologically, might be helpful for people in those kind of circumstances.
But I can also imagine a lot of people who have, you know, lost a limb, for example, and they also still work out and they still, obviously fitter than I am, for example, able-bodied Juliet here. I guess they would say, why do you need this? Is it perfectly, I can do it perfectly well on my own. There'll be a lot of ethical things that I think are raised if this drug, you know, becomes available to humans.
Yeah. But anyway, what we can summarize from this discussion, I think, is that technology is keeping up with the sophistication of our fitness goals. I mean, in the old days, it's all just about the weight shown on the scale or the size of your trousers. But now we're looking at things that are more sophisticated, like your body fat percentages and your personal best, your best marathon number, or your one rep max for your squats, your deadlifts, your bench press, and all that.
I just have to say I'm still traditional because it's just about my trousers and my
And that should be okay too.
If that's
what's going to motivate you to move, right? I think why not? But we're learning more about what fitness really means. It involves your nutrition, the quality of your rest, rather than superficial numbers. These are the things that used to only concern professional athletes, but now technology is making these parameters more relevant to us if we use them well. Yeah. Moving on, we're still discussing technology and fitness, but this time we'll focus on social media. Think hashtag Fitspo, coming up on BFM 89.9. Welcome back. You're listening to The Bigger Picture. It's our Health News Digest segment with me, Tina Camellia, and...
I'm Juliet Jacobs.
If you've just joined us, we've been talking about our physical fitness, how we choose to keep fit, what we use or don't use to achieve our fitness goals. Now, we're going to visit our Facebook and Instagram pages, not literally, but we're taking a look at the rise of Fitspo, or fitness inspiration posts. Have you heard of this hashtag before?
Never. I didn't know it was called that, but I have seen it everywhere.
And you were mentioning earlier sweat fee. I've never heard of that. It's so interesting.
That's, again, something new that I learned, but yeah. Mm.
Do you follow any fitness celebrities online?
Okay, so let me just go back in time to about 10 years ago. So I used to weigh about 85 kilos at the time, and I decided it was time to lose weight, etc. And I went online, obviously, and I started following one celebrity fitness instructor. His name was Raphael. I can't even remember his surname now. So he I did follow, and actually I used the exercise things that he had there and his advice on eating and diet and exercise to lose weight. And I actually lost about 30 kilos just going on his principles. So that was probably the closest I ever got to following a celebrity fitness person.
And it worked for you?
It really worked, because it was just very basic information, you know, simple exercises to do. And he'd also do some very motivational speeches about, because I think he was we like to call ourselves former fatties. So he was also a former fatty who, you know, lost don't know how many kilos as well and became obviously a very famous instructor. But this is in the States, of course.
And so we ask you guys, whether you follow any fitness celebrities. And here's what you guys have to say.
I try to motivate myself in my own way, but I don't follow them on Instagram or social media.
I don't have an account as well, so I don't.
I'm very seldom to follow the poster.
Well, it depends. Some I like it, I just read. I follow. That I don't like it, I just don't follow. It's simple.
No, I don't.
No, I don't, because I'm too lazy to do all those things. I'm kind of a lazy guy, so yeah.
No, first off, I don't follow Fitspo on Instagram and Facebook. But what I think about posts like this is I think it's relevant, especially when, you know, you're living in a culture where, you know, there's a lot of health involved, especially in the millennials as well. So I think it's a very good idea for, you know, these kinds of brands to go out to promote, you know, good and healthy living as well.
So it seems like no one yeah. we ask followed anyone. Not even what, back in my day was Jillian Michaels.
Jillian Michaels, yeah.
Yeah. The biggest
back in your day.
Yeah.
She's still there. Bella Jones.
I don't know what she's up to now, but yeah. There are a lot more fitness celebrities on, especially on Instagram. I'm not so sure about Facebook, but they're all over. I'm not on Instagram anymore, but when I was, they'd have things like 30-day challenge, whether it's an exercise challenge or a diet challenge. And these are good for people who are looking for ideas, especially if you're doing it on your own. If you don't have a PT,
yeah,
and you see how other people are responding to those ideas, whether they've started and how far along they've gone and their progress, and you can gauge from there whether it's something you want to try, mm-hmm, and then you can share your results. I think in that way, it is not a bad idea.
Yeah, I go back to the thing, whatever works best for you, right? Yeah. If that's something that, you know, motivates you to get moving, you know, you need that, oh, I need to do this in 12 weeks and I need to see results, then okay, you know, go for it. But if you're the type that, you know, you just want to do it and 6 months down the road you see results, you know, all the better for you.
But then on the other hand, you have people who, they don't know what they're talking about. It could just be accidental that they got to lose that much weight and look good.
Yeah.
So they're not qualified to give out fitness advice or nutritional advice,
yep,
and yet they're doing it and they're monetizing it.
That's where the problem comes in, right? Because
yeah,
they're charging you, because they're like, I think what some of what I've seen is like, they'll give you a few freebies and then
yeah,
say, if you want the full package, if you want me to, you know, modify your eating plan and things like that, okay, sign up for such and such an amount. Yeah,
yeah.
But yeah, who are these people really?
Exactly. So my question is, you know, are they showing off? Are they just being really great marketers? Or are they genuinely trying to help? Sometimes some of these Fitspo posts are also thinly veiled body shaming posts.
Or exercises and vanity, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, things like strong is the new skinny.
Mm.
I have a lot of problem with that tagline.
Why? Why is that?
Because it seems that, first of all, skinny was the thing. It's never the thing for me. That's never been the goal. Strong, yes, but why not just have a tagline that says, be strong? Why do you have to say strong is the new skinny? So you're glorifying the past glory of skinny, but now it's all about strength.
Yeah, and you know, all those people who are strong, they're also still kind of skinny, I find.
But you can also be really strong and not skinny.
Yeah, exactly.
Think about powerlifters.
Yeah.
When I was doing it very actively, I was hanging out a lot of these guys, and they're thick. They're very thick, and they're very strong.
Mm-hmm. I'm thinking of somebody as gorgeous as Serena Williams, for example.
There you go.
You know, I mean, the kind of insults hurled at her.
Yeah.
But my God, how strong is she? She
yeah,
could whip, I don't know, how many people's behinds. Yeah, anyway. But I mean, the kind of shaming she faces, some of the things that she wears because she's not typically skinny.
Earlier last year, I think we were speaking to Karencia, who is herself, well, she is an athlete. I mean, she's a triathlete and she's done so many things. But she's also, I would consider her a fitness celebrity because she's got a very high profile. Not just within the fitness community, but also, you know, social media. And this is what she had to say about body shaming.
It may not come across as something very blaring or very loud. One thing, Malaysians are still quite conservative. They don't really say it out loud in public or things like that. But they do let that comment slide once in a while. I've seen it happen to people that I work with. I've seen it happen, not particularly to myself. But yeah, I think I myself probably in the whole atmosphere get swept up by the whole image that we want to be a certain way. We have, whether intentionally or unintentionally, pass some comments that it's actually, in actual fact, body shaming.
Yeah. I don't know if you remember this case of this woman in the States. I think she was a model of Victoria's Secret. I mean, one of those types of models. And she secretly photographed a lady who was changing in the changing room. And she was obviously not picture perfect, as we are fed to believe you should look, right? And she posted it. And the backlash that she got after that, that made me feel very happy. Not happy for the poor lady who was shamed and had her naked picture, you know, blasted all over the world. But the punishment that that model got for being so disrespectful and so rude. Yeah, again, skinny is not the only way to be.
And have you witnessed similar situations in any of the groups that you're part of?
I wouldn't say shaming, but it was a simple thing that I noticed, actually. The ladies who, in this particular group that I'm in, the ones who were slimmer and posted their sort of weefies of their bodies, their slim bodies, and, you know, they got more likes than the slightly more overweight ladies who posted their selfies, you know, post-workout. And I don't know if that's just me reading too much into it, but I think there is that slight sort of imbalance still going on. Yeah.
Well, research suggests that exposure to fitness-related images can be detrimental, particularly for women. And women reported increased negative mood, depression, and anxiety after only 30 minutes of viewing fitness magazines promoting the athletic ideal.
Yep, I can attest to that. It's quite depressing, I suppose, because, you know, you're fed like your abs must look a certain way. You must have these lines. You've got to be this strong. Otherwise, you're not quite it, right? You're not quite reaching the goal, the universal goal of fitness.
And I think if you have low self-esteem and you're looking at all of these images and all the things that other people are doing, and you want to achieve the same and you follow exactly what they're doing, but your lifestyle, the circumstances in your life might be different from theirs. Maybe they're a full-time freelancer, for example, and you have a desk job. You can't put in the kind of time and effort and energy that the other person can. So,
and I think also things like, you know, medical conditions that you may have.
Exactly.
Like I don't know, for women, some women who have PCOS, for example, right? I think it's a bit harder for them to lose weight.
That's right.
Compared to others.
Yeah. One thing I'd like to point out is that some of these online fitness challenges, they can be dangerous if you don't know your medical history, if you don't know, if you don't get assessed first for your fitness level and where you should start, right? Especially without professional supervision. Yeah. And I just want to give an example using yoga, because there are a lot of yogis on Instagram, celebrity yogis on Instagram. And last year or the year before that, for International Yoga Day, we had Dr. Dilip Kumar, who is a yoga instructor, and he was commenting about all this kind of branded yoga, is what he calls it.
Okay, let me tell you that yoga is yoga. And when you talk about names, when you talk about ex-yoga, a person's name, yoga, no, yoga has been existing for 3,000 years, it's a way of life. It's all branding. So someone gives a name of his yoga or her yoga, it's branding. A plow is a plow. Whatever you call a plow is a plow, a shoulder stand is a shoulder stand. So whatever yoga you call, what's the difference in their shoulder stand or plow or cobra pose? So this is all a branding, you know. Everybody wants a brand. Everybody wants to be recognized. That's all.
And if you have that branding, you get to charge a premium.
Yeah. Yes.
Exactly. I mean, a lot of these celebrity yogis, they focus on what I like to call mega posture. You know, they get into very intricate, I don't know, they fold themselves in such a impressive. I mean, it's impressive, but it's not something for everyone, especially if you are a dedicated Instagram yogi. Mm-hmm. You're doing it, what, 6-8 hours a day, compared to the rest of us probably doing it once a week. Yeah. It's not going to be something that we can do, but they put up these challenges, you know, it's performance-based yoga. Maybe it's a bit harsh, but I think it's a kind of show-offy yoga. But I like the kind of yoga that's a little bit less ego-focused, if I can put it that way. The building this culture of weekend workshop yoga.
Okay.
You know, they fly into KL and they charge you 500 ringgit for an hour session with them. And then they fly out and you got no continuous guidance afterwards. I think that that's a bit...
Unless you sign up for their online classes, maybe?
There you go, yeah.
Not all of them are like that, obviously.
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But I just want to put a plug to my in-laws who are, you know, in their 60s. They've started yoga and they're just, you know, no celebrity tinge to it or whatever. But wow, they just feel so much better now doing what they're doing. And it's just, no fancy things, just basic. They just started their basic classes and it's really quite amazing how much better they feel, you know. It just shows in their skin as well.
And so what we can take away from this whole hour is that do what you do to move. Whatever it takes.
To make you feel better.
Yeah. And to eat well, to rest well.
That's an important thing we didn't touch on. Resting.
Resting.
Well.
Yeah.
Because yeah. I mean, I remember when I was that fitness crazed person, I didn't rest enough and I would injure myself.
There you go.
Yeah, it was quite terrible. I got told off again by my gym instructor.
Yeah. That's a show on its own. Yeah. You know, resting, relaxing, de-stressing.
Yeah.
But that's all we have for the hour. I hope you enjoy it. Our aim was really about encouraging an active dialogue about our physical health, the pros and cons of using technology to meet our fitness goals. Keep the conversation going, but most of all, take charge of your fitness and health. If you missed any part of the show, download the podcast available in the next hour on our BFM app, which you can find on the Apple App Store and Google Play. I'm Tina Camellia.
And I'm Juliet Jacobs.
You've been listening to The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.